What's up, everybody? We're back. Well, I'm sorry to say, I'm back. It's just me, again. Here we are. You know what? Future Dave, for you, might have actually covered this. He's past Dave for me, and I think I might have given you the whole download. So I'm kind of wondering now to myself, is an intro even necessary? But I've already started, so I'm going to finish. It's a solo episode. It's shorter. You'll notice that. You have more information than I do at this point. You can see how long the episode is. So I rambled for however long the episode appears to be, and I cover a great many things. And here are some of those things that I cover. Masters of the Air, the finale, some news, specifically some Netflix news, and perhaps James Bond casting news as well. Frieren, episode 21, and some revelations about directors in the industry that follow. And then we end on Shangri-La, Frontier, and Solo Leveling, and just kind of where I'm at with both of those shows. I hope to have Grant back soon and at full health, and I thank you very much for tuning in and appreciating these solo episodes while they're around. Enjoy. What up, everybody? Everybody, what up, everybody? A little Wonder Boy reference for you. The Venn diagram of our audience crossover, I'm sure, is exactly two people listening to this. You should appreciate that. Hi, everyone. Hello. Episode 115. You may notice another solo episode. Grant still under the weather in the throes of fatherhood, just enjoying all of the illness that comes with the newly born. But that seems fair. Again, he chose this, okay? So don't feel too bad for him. I'm kidding. We're still wishing him a swift and full recovery, and I'm sure he'll be back in no time. But in the meantime, you get to listen to me and see how off the rails and unhinged I can get without someone keeping me in check. So let's explore that together, shall we? Okay, I'm going to start... I think with some real life, and when I say real life, I mean live action stuff, because it's more top of mind right now. In particular, there's like real life live action news, and also last night we finished Masters of the Air. They had their finale. I did not realize Masters of the Air was 9 episodes. I don't know why. I was just assuming it was 10, because I think that's how long Band of Brothers was. And it just felt like the pace was on schedule for 10, but hey, I'm not going to complain. You love a finale. And in particular, I really dug Masters of the Air's series finale. I recorded a reel / TikTok for this, which you can view in the fullness of time at Part Time Otaku Podcast on our Instagram and TikTok pages. You may join us there. But, you know, I think the gist of it is... the gist of it. I mean, I gave the gist of it in the reel and the TikTok, but I guess here would be a good opportunity to tell you how I feel in more detail. I won't ramble too long, but here are my takeaways. I think it had a bit of a rocky start. I think the two leads are, the word I'm going to use is, they give uneven performances. Austin Butler is good in this, for sure. I'm also just coming off his performance in Dune 2, where he was great. And I think at least in Dune 2, he has fully lost what, you know, the remnants of whatever Elvis voice was lingering, though I would be curious, just for the record, to know which was filmed first. But yeah, he had issues in this, man. And it's tough because it's like, it's this earworm thing and I'm putting it in your ear and I feel bad about that. But once you hear the Elvis voice coming through in his performance, you cannot unhear it. And it's a real pain in the ass. And I would say it's like, it was most evident in episodes 1 and 2. And then he largely overcame it, or at least I didn't notice it, throughout the most of the series. And then there's like a couple scenes in the finale of the show, like the series finale, where it's like, okay, he's like, I can't even see him on screen, but I hear his lines. I wouldn't be surprised if he was in full Elvis hair and makeup and costume right now, because he's like, well, so gladly Elvis came to rescue us. Oh, no, I'm kidding. It's not that bad, but it's close.
So I don't know, but overall, like, his character is fantastic. He's like, I don't want to say the heart of the story. He's one of the many beating hearts of the story. I think, you know, if you've seen Band of Brothers, if you've seen Pacific, Saving Private Ryan, all brought to you by Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg, the WW2 duo, I think they do a really good job at, like, trying to humanize everybody in the story, not just, like, who's headlining. And they do that really well with Austin Butler. I'm not going to give anything away, but he is kind of absent for pieces of this, and it's like you always come back to his character, and you're like, damn, this is good. He's just a good dude. And, you know, he plays a real dude, just like Band of Brothers. At the end of this, they kind of connect all the dots, and they show you who the real veterans were, that they, all the actors were portraying, what their real stories were, what happened to them throughout the war, and subsequent to the war after the series ends. So that was pretty cool. There's a guy named Callum Turner who co-stars opposite Butler. They're kind of like a duo. And he's great. He has a very sizable chunk of screen time in the series. He's one of the most central figures. But, and there is a but, like I said, he's good. And I'm going to do this to you again, and I'm sorry. But I think Sam said he's European or British, or I don't know. He has an accent that he's covering up, I guess. So he's doing a... I mean, with a name like Callum, right? I assume he is anyway. But he's doing an American accent throughout the show. And I wouldn't have known that, like, he was, you know, from somewhere else doing an American accent had, you know, because it's that good. It sounds like, it sounds very American, I guess. But it sounds so American that, and, like, I shit you not, he is doing Chris Evans as Captain America. And I know that sounds, like, specific, but it's, like, you can kind of connect the dots. It's, like, there's so much footage of Chris Evans as Captain America. And here's the craziest part. Both Austin Butler and this guy that Callum Turner is playing, their nicknames are Buck and Bucky. And who's Captain America's best friend in Masters of the Air? It's Bucky. And he refers to him often as Buck. So you got this guy, Callum Turner, going, I don't know about that, Buck. And it's like, if you close your eyes, you're in a Captain America movie. Like, it's that, it's, again, it's distracting. It's hilarious. But you, like, you know, you suspend your sense of disbelief. You just, you push through it. And, like, if you don't connect those dots, and if you don't know those movies that I'm referencing, you haven't seen Elvis and you haven't seen any of those MCU movies, then you're probably going to be fine. And you're going to enjoy it. And even if you have seen those things, I think you're going to enjoy it anyway, because the performances are great. Okay, enough about the two co-stars. As far as the rest of the actual series goes, great soundtrack. Absolutely beyond the shadow of a doubt. And I challenge anyone to provide me, you know, with a better one. But this is the best aerial combat, or I don't even know if I should say aerial combat, because it's not necessarily, like, quote-unquote dogfighting per se, because they're in a bomber squad, but, like, just aerial CG shots that I've ever seen. Like, the POV shots that they do from the bomber, from the cockpit, looking at adjacent bombers at however many thousand feet up, the sights looking downwards at their targets, they really demonstrate a sense of scale, like, extremely well. And it's, you know, I think I sometimes get a little bit too close to things, and I take myself out of the movie or the show at times, where it's like, God, I just wonder how they did this. But I had that moment, like, a lot watching this show. It was like, man, what's real? What's CG? I can't tell the difference. Like, that's a really fun problem to have. And I mean, it's like, you know, practically, like, they probably didn't get 30 World War II bombers in the air for the sake of shooting practically. So you can probably assume those shots are CG. But at the same time, it's like, man, sometimes you're like, man, I wouldn't be surprised with how good it looks. So I really want to, like, tip my cap to the production quality of the show. It is otherworldly. It did feel a little bit new, like, too new and shiny with how nice and polished it looked. I can't really find a better term for it, especially because I was comparing it directly to Band of Brothers, which I think most people who have seen both shows will, because I think, like, if you're watching this show, you're probably, like, into this genre, and, like, Band of Brothers is kind of a giant in this whole genre, so I don't know, take that for what you will. But yeah, it's like the most expensive looking show or you know, film or just like anything on screen in this area than I've seen. So I thought that was worth noting. Great ending, emotional, more than I thought it would be. You get invested in these characters. They have some really meaningful journeys. There's a lot of growth. I don't have the name in front of me, but there's a guy who plays Rosie. There's this character named Rosie who ends up stealing, I want to say, every scene that he's in. Screw it. Let's do it live, right? Grant's not here to help me out. What is it? Nate Mann. The actor's name is Nate Mann, and he plays Major Robert Rosie, or Rosemond. And Rosie, I think, kind of becomes a bit of a fan favorite by the end of the show. I also became extremely invested in Anthony Boyle's character. He plays Major Crosby in the show. And anyway, lovable characters, great story, important watch. I was really wondering, yeah, I don't want to spoil anything in particular, but like, you know, Band of Brothers kind of had, and you, I think you have to do this, you have to acknowledge the Holocaust in one way, no matter what you're doing World War II wise. Like, it, in certain instances, like, I was like, oh, maybe they're not going to cover it because maybe like the 100th, maybe that division or that bomber squad, just like, they didn't have to interact with that part of the war, but they kind of work it in a really interesting way, similar to how Band of Brothers did. And yeah, I think they really, really nailed that part. So I was, you know, yeah, I don't know. They nailed it. Last thing I'll say, they also included a 1-hour companion documentary on documentary piece on Apple TV that is like from real found footage. It's with interviews with Hanks and narrated by Hanks and Spielberg, and has actual footage from the real life veterans before most of them passed away. So if you want to, if you're hungry for more, which I think a lot of people out there will be after they see this, then you can watch that afterwards on Apple TV. I haven't done it yet, but I have every intention of doing that. Okay. Masters of the Air. Pretty dope, right? Okay. How do I pivot into from World War II into the latest Jake Paul news? I don't know if there is a segue. I gotta be honest. I don't know if there's a segue I could make in good taste. And I make a lot of jokes in poor taste, but I don't think I will in this instance. I could say that Jake Paul makes me feel like I'm watching the Holocaust, but I'm not going to do that because that would be in poor taste. But Jake Paul's going to fight Mike Tyson. I'm not here to cover that, though I'm sure the appetite is massive. But I wanted to cover the fact that Netflix is hosting this fight, and I was scrolling Netflix yesterday, and I noticed that they also have another live weekly show airing called Dinner Time with David Chang, the famous celebrity chef, and he's having, you know, a bunch of celebrities as live guests, usually like a duo. I think the first one I watched, we threw on the other day, was Eliza Schlesinger with somebody else, and then the next one we turned on was Nick Kroll with John Mulaney, like the best comedic duo out there. What's super, I think there's two really interesting things, or probably more than that, worth noting as far as Netflix and this show and all that. One, I think if you're anybody into live events right now, especially sporting with this this Tyson fight coming up, you should likely be nervous. You know, Netflix, I think last their last quarterly earnings, like they reported they're at around 260 million households worldwide, which, you know, isn't as big as it used to be, or I don't think it's like as, you know, it's, they're not exactly the 1,000-pound gorilla in the space that they were maybe 5 years ago, but Netflix getting into live pay-per-view or live, just live sporting events or live events in general is like a really interesting move. And I think it also, it's funny because apparently, like, I watched the pilot with David Chang and he was talking about how like, oh, I just really wanted to do a live show, you know, a live cooking show, old school, and like, you know, keep all the mistakes in, keep it organic. And like, you know, it's not like we have this prepped and that prepped and it's all real. And I think that appeals to a lot of people, right? You love the live stream, you know, Twitch and YouTube Live and all that stuff. What's interesting about getting A-listers to do this stuff live is, like, you can see them being uncomfortable and, like, wanting more from the production value in the middle of the shoot. Because you got them complaining, like, oh, like, I want to jump into this conversation, but I'm chewing and I wish I, you know, I'm trying not to eat because I want to, I don't want there to be dead air on the live stream. Cause like now that's now a problem that they have to work, they have to work out as opposed to just cutting it together and then putting the episode out afterwards. Right. And you can see David Chang like sweating, like, oh, it's been 10 minutes and I'm not one dish in yet. And I meant to have three dishes out, but also we're trying to keep these to like roughly an hour. And it's funny. It's like, I'm glad that they're experimenting. I think generally speaking, experimentation is good. Competition is good. It leads to a better product, a better experience for the viewer ultimately. But in this instance, I was like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting because it's like, you can immediately tell why everybody pivoted away from live because it's a pain in the ass. So I don't know. I'm curious to see if this this show in particular is successful, if they do more of it. They have, you know, there's at least six episodes out now on Netflix, Dinner Time with David Chang, and I know there's, I think they're doing one weekly coming forward, or going forward, so keep that in mind. I guess we'll see. And last in live action news, Aaron Taylor Johnson, it's officially, you know, apparently it's like the rumor mill, but it looks like Aaron Taylor Johnson has received an official offer to be the next Bond. My only complaint here is I think his voice is too weird and too high to be Bond. And I think Sam said he's too short. But by God, if Tom Cruise can get away with it and you can shoot an entire movie with him on boxes, then I think you can do that. Was that Edge of Tomorrow? Grant would know. Like, it wasn't that opposite Emily Blunt or something? They had shot him in, on top of a box for all of his scenes with her because he was too short. I don't know. But hey, you know what I mean? Us short kings, I don't know if I qualify, but let's be real. I probably do. You know, we need a W. If we can get a Bond under 6 foot, I'll take it. All right? Bring it. Bring on the Bond of... Make the next Bond 5'4". You know what I mean? Everybody's about inclusivity and diversity these days. Let's go. Let's really go for it. Make him 5'2". Okay, I'm going to ask Sam if she can make more noise out there. Oh, okay. Well, never mind. I think she's good. Maybe she heard that. And you know what? She had it coming. Okay, anime things. Man, I've got something crazy. Okay, so Frieren, episode 27. I'm not going to give you like a moment-by-moment breakdown. I think the highlights... Here, you know, spoiler warning. Frieren, episode 27. I love the twist. Right, I mean, they have, like, a mini-twist in the beginning. Like, Frieren's staff is busted. Obviously, Frieren is going to get it fixed. That part is not crazy whatsoever. There's this little, like, breadcrumb moment, a little bit of foreshadowing that indicates Ceri may also be concealing her mana the way Frieren has been. And then they come full circle to that later. But the twist is that, I think, in total, 12 people ended up passing the second test to become a first-class mage. But they were, in large part, kind of carried by Frieren. And this Ceri character makes note of this and says, like, well, they really wouldn't be here. And under normal circumstances, they'd probably all be killed, or the majority of them would be killed, given a typical kind of first-class mage exam. Hold on. I guess I didn't even have to say hold on, because through the magic of editing, no time will have gone by at all for you, will it? In fact, this entire sentence is redundant. I could have Grant edit it out. I'm not going to. Anyway, so Ceri takes over the first class mage certification, that last test, fails just about everybody, and then the twist is she fails Frieren, which we'll come back to, but she doesn't fail Fern. In fact, she kind of she's clearly interested by Fern. Fern detects that Ceri's been fluctuating or concealing her own mana this whole time as well. And I don't know. I loved the whole breakdown. I think Ceri is his character. Clearly the show has been dancing around for a little while now. But yeah, I don't know. I really liked the interaction between Frieren and Ceri. Because it was very clear that it was kind of a foregone conclusion, and I like that part of the show, where it's like, Ceri knows she'll fail Frieren because she knows that Frieren doesn't feel like she should pass. But Frieren doesn't feel like she should pass because she knows she hasn't become the mage that Ceri wants her to be. And it's kind of this, like, snake eating its own tail thing. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, they have like a pretty fundamental, I don't want to call it a misunderstanding, but a pretty fundamentally different perspective on things. And that entire conversation they had about, you know, Freerun's favorite spell being the one to cast a Field of Flowers is like this really cool roundabout way about like, yeah, it's a useless spell, but it at the end of the day is what empowered her to meet her allies who ultimately defeated the Demon King. She defeated the Demon King alongside. And had it not been for this like silly useless spell that someone like Ceri, who's kind of like more Vulcan-like than anything at this stage, wouldn't have considered to be useful, then she probably never would have been in that position. She wouldn't have met the same allies. And like Flom said in that flashback, Ceri could never have been the one to defeat the Demon King, right? So it's, I don't know, it's a very, I don't know, it's a bit of like a logic trap. And I don't know, I dig the show and doing this kind of thing. And I was really curious how they were going to handle the whole Fern thing. And it was like super straightforward. And I love that, I don't want to say Freerun got the better of Ceri in those exchanges. So much so that it's almost like, for as inhuman as Freerun is, this show is kind of about her exploring her own humanity as slowly, as despite it developing incredibly slowly. But it's almost like this like little bit of empathy or illogical kind of human-like behavior that she has puts her so far ahead of Ceri when it comes down to things like this, in empathy and in having relationships and in being like a quote person. And then simultaneously, Ceri's probably the better mage, right? But then, I don't know, sometimes it's like, is she? I don't really know. Probably. I wonder if the manga and the anime later will explore that. But I really dug it, and I really enjoyed this episode. And we've got the finale next week, so I'm hoping Grant is recovered in time for that. But I'm sure we're going to cover it in one way or another. But I have to mention something. So, you know, the algorithm, likely why you're here, is the algorithm likely led you here. And my own algorithm, you can likely imagine, is pretty centric to this kind of stuff. It's, you know, it's a litany of Jake Paul news and up-and-coming anime directors. I wish I were kidding. No, I'm kidding. But one video I sent Grant yesterday was like, oh, this anime director is changing the game. And it's like, you know, there's videos like this everywhere. But the thumbnail caught my attention, and it's, I think, the showrunner or the director for the series of Freerun Beyond Journey's End. And it was like, you know, the thumbnail was kind of just like a little click or a little montage of what this director had done before, and something caught my eye, so I clicked, and here we are. So his name, Freerun's director, is, and forgive me for the pronunciation, Keiichiro Saito. And what grabbed my attention is like, yeah, Freerun, obviously. But he directed a couple episodes of Sunny Boy, which, as you may know, if you're a longtime listener of this podcast, is maybe my favorite anime of all time, or at least, you know, in the top five. I think it's one of the best anime ever made. There's lots of really cool stuff out there on Sunny Boy. And if you haven't watched it, it's like 8 to 10, 11 episodes. I can't remember offhand. You'd think I would if it were my favorite. But it's on Crunchyroll. Check it out. But yeah, he did direct a couple episodes of Sunny Boy, and he did key animation on like six episodes of Sunny Boy. And Grant, if you're listening, guess what else he's worked on? He directed 12 episodes of Bocchi the Rock. I don't know if Grant knew that. He did a shitload of ending sequences for Boogie Pop, which I know is like a really well-known or considered a classic anime, I think. What else do I have here? He did some key animation for Mob Psycho, Super Crooks. I don't know. I just thought that was hilarious. It's like, of course this dude's been working on a bunch of other shit that's really cool. So I thought that was interesting. I may be crossing over into like a new realm of anime fandom, where Grant, I think at this point, like his Discover Weekly on Spotify, or if you check out his like 2023 playlist, which is linked in our Instagram bio on our link tree, he made this playlist of like all of his favorite anime soundtracks, OPs, EDs from 2023. He's at that level of dork, where I think he's just like finding all these anime soundtracks, and I might have to go down this route of like following individual animators and directors' careers, because if you just look at the body of work that this guy has, it's like, damn. Like, if you worked on Sunny Boy and Frieren and Mob Psycho and Boogie Pop, like, what an absurd batting average that is. That's just crazy to me. I know that the industry is, like, quote, small, and that a lot of people work on a lot of different projects, or a small group of people work on a large amount of products, and I know that it's similar with the voice acting community, but I still think that's pretty nuts. Anyway, I thought that was worth noting. Okay, odds and ends here. I don't have a ton to say about Solo Leveling other than this. I am enjoying Solo Leveling. I don't know if the hoopla and the hype is like... I don't know if I'm feeling that in this moment. I think it's like a very fun show that I look forward to watching every single week. I'm having a very similar experience with Shangri-La Frontier. I'm on episode 12 now. And... I don't know, maybe Solo Leveling would make, like, a better binge. But, like, yeah, I don't know. It has not blown my mind. I think it has definitely opened me up to this kind of anime. Like, this kind of, this whole fantasy video gaming thing. And I'm having an equal amount of fun, I will say, with Shangri-La Frontier. Solo Leveling is a little bit different, obviously. But, yeah, it's cool to have these both going simultaneously. I think I said this a couple weeks ago. It's kind of a shame I didn't find one and then another subsequently, so that I could, like, explore the whole genre, because I have a limited amount of time to watch anime these days, which is a bummer. I say that childless. I can't even imagine how Grant is keeping up with all this stuff. But, yeah, I think that's about it for this weekend. I don't think we had any questions come through, or if they did, I forgot to check, and I'm sorry, but that's what you get when you get a solo episode, okay? You get it under 30 minutes, and I think I did this, you know, I think I did this relatively well. Okay, I think I already plugged it, but one more time, check out the Part-Time Otaku Podcast Instagram handle, follow us on TikTok, and if you're listening to us, I think, like, most of you aren't subscribed to the actual podcast itself, so I think many of you are listening on Apple Music and on Spotify. I think we also upload these to YouTube, and if you are listening on YouTube, then hit the subscribe button, though I have to imagine, I'm pretty sure that's not very many of you. I think we're still going to do video at some stage, and then maybe, like, YouTube will make more sense and gain a little bit more traction, but I think at this point I'm just rambling. Normally I get Grant to say the thing, he's not here, so I'll say the thing. Bye, guys. Cheers. See you next week. Also, we're here next week. Did I say that yet? We're here next week. Bye.